Are you listening? Damn.
And a big welcome back to the Endurance Hour podcast. Alongside Coach Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. This is episode 360, year 10. First question from Katie in our T2 Endurance group on Facebook. Quote, the entire podcast last week was great. Lots of exclamation points. Thank you, Katie. Do you have any podcasts that talk about training to qualify for Kona or Worlds 70.3, both in age group? And how is the training different? She asked because I keep telling myself it'll never happen because I have a physical job where I walk 10 miles a day, 5 to 6 days a week. She is a postal service carrier. And to add training to training or doing harder training, I just think it's impossible. Ah, there's the word, isn't it? Anything's possible. What are your thoughts? Thank you very much from Katie.
Hey, Katie. To answer your first question, Dave and I have talked before. I couldn't find the exact episode, but we have talked about what it takes to qualify for Kona. And there are actually a few options. Is number one, you know, to qualify, go to a qualifying race and finish in the top one, two, or three in your age group, depending on how many slots they're giving away. Also, you can get a roll down slot. So if the top, let's say there's two qualifying slots in your age group and they turn it down and you go to the roll down ceremony, it could roll down to you. And then there used to be a lottery that they got rid of a few years ago. So that doesn't count, but there's now the legacy program, which means you can go to Kona if you've done 12 World Triathlon Corporation Ironman distance races. You can be entered in the Legacy Foundation, and that's how you can get your way to Kona. So nothing's impossible. I mean, there are options. Now let's touch on the qualifying process of getting top in your age group. Part of doing that is being a little bit strategic and choosing your race wisely, meaning if you're ready to say, this is the year I want to give it my all to qualify for Kona, make sure you pick a race that suits your strengths as an athlete. If you're a strong climber, you should on the bike, you should choose a race that has a lot of climbing. If you're a weak climber on the bike, you should choose a race that doesn't have a lot of climbing. And then in the training process, if something's your work on your limiter. So if your limiter is running, then you want to make sure you work on your limiter, such as like the off season. Usually that's the fall and winter for most athletes. So you can get your weaker sport a little bit more focus and a little bit more effort. So when you start your final preparation for your A race that you are giving it all you have to qualify, you're a little bit ahead of the game. And another thing about training is there's no one size fits training plan that's going to help everyone. Everyone's going to adapt to a training plan differently. Everyone's going to adapt to coaching. I definitely recommend coaching for anyone who is looking to, and has their goal to qualify for Kona. I would totally recommend hiring a coach with experience and that you match in a relationship, that you can build a relationship with your coach. They're there on your journey with you. They're there for accountability. They're there for education. And they can help you with training around your life schedule. So they can help you manage walking 10 miles a day and how to best fit in your training for swimming, biking, running, and strength training, as well as help you manage your nutrition. Because walking 10 miles a day is a lot. And, you know, maybe you can look at, depending on your route, I know postal service people here in Georgia, they drive, so they're not walking. So maybe there's a way you can, for a few months, limit the amount of walking and you can drive. I'm not sure if that's an option.
Hmm. Little segues or one of those other kind of two-wheel things that are gyroscope where you can lean forward. I forget what those are called. Do you know what those are called?
No.
Kids are on them all the time. Or a razor. I don't know. You're right, though. All that pounding. I don't know if you'd be conditioned, though, as that's your normal thing. Or you just work it into your training, assuming, I don't know. It's tough to add that in because that's what you do all the time. But it does develop some fatigue.
Right. It does. So again, that's a good point. So if you're walking 10 miles every day and that's your normal, you know, livelihood, and you've been doing that for a long time, then your body's adapted to that. So if I were to just jump into a job right now and walk 10 miles a day, my training would suffer a little bit, because that's not something that my body's adapted to or acclimated to. So, you know, again, it just depending on really everything about your current lifestyle, nothing's impossible. And so there, it's definitely a possibility to keep that Kona qualifying goal on your mind and something you're striving for. Now, added to what I've already said, you know, you need to change your mindset is to nothing's impossible, or to, you know, everything is possible. So changing that mindset, and again, mapping out a plan that fits your lifestyle, and really staying focused and present on the training that you can do with the lifestyle that you have and the job that you have.
On a somewhat related note, just more of it, just off the cuff here, I wonder what's more challenging for someone who sits all day to go and train, or someone who's on their feet all day then has to train. Which would be the more difficult job for those listening at home? What do you do for a living? Are you standing all day? Are you on your feet all day? Or do you sit at a desk all day and then you're going, I got to go do my workout before or after work? I wonder whether it would be more hard.
That's a great question. And based on, for me personally, I'd say sitting all day is going to impact my training in a more negative way than if I was walking all day. Because sitting, I think, you know, with people's postures and it changes, you know, it weakens your hips. And I think you just get weaker from a joint muscular standpoint due to sitting, and your core gets weak than if you were someone who happened to be walking all day. That's your warm up. You're ready to go. And if you plan out your nutrition and your hydration and possibly caffeine intake throughout the day, then, you know, when you get done with your route and you're done with what you have to do, you're all warmed up and ready to go. Or you get it done in the morning, get it done before the job starts.
Yeah. I would think that, you know, poor circulation, you're sitting down all day, you're not really moving the body unless you go to the water cooler or going to lunch, but you're sitting, you're not really, there's no movement. So things can get stiff or settle versus moving around. And if you are moving around all day, these are just off the top of my head, then you've adapted it to that type of activity just as easy as you can adapt to sitting around all day. You know, that's what you want to do when you're done with work. I'm just sitting around. That's what I've been doing. But if you've been moving all day, it's not that much harder to keep on moving, especially since you're used to it. But with movement all day, you can get into the bike and get into aero position, and you're not, you know, putting all that weight on your legs. Or if you get in the pool, that'd be a great way to, all right, I've been walking all day, now I can swim for the next hour and a half.
Yeah. So I, you know, it just seems like it's a matter of planning, preparation, time management, giving yourself plenty of time to reach your goal, and not say, okay, it's 3 months away, you know, 6 months away. Just look into the future and say, am I going to try to qualify at one race, or am I going to try to qualify every year, or am I going for 12, where some people I know can do 3 Ironman or more in 1 year because they're just going to finish so they can check off and accumulate 12 Ironman so they can enter the legacy program. So again, that just someone who has a lot of money, that's very, costs a lot of money to do all that. So it kind of just depends, but mainly, you know, I want to stress is changing that mindset that it is possible under the right circumstances, and there's nothing bad that's going to happen with pursuing your goal and not giving up on your dream to go to Kona. You're only going to continue to get more fit, get more experience, learn and adapt and keep moving forward. Because, you know, again, looking at a 70.3 qualification, I know some athletes who just raced the Blue Ridge 70.3 in Virginia last weekend, and the roll down for a 70.3 slot went down to like 38th place. It was somewhere in the 30s. So, you know, choosing that race that has a lot of slots, that is kind of an end of season race that may get a roll down slot for the following year.
And that's because it's in Finland? Is that why? It's a international race?
No, this is for this year, St. George. This person qualified for St. George, and he was 30-something. I could be wrong on 38th. Maybe it was 34th. But I looked at his placement, and I texted his wife, and I said, did he get the slot? And she said, yeah, it did roll down. And this was in St. George. And so roll downs, you know, you just got to be there. You got to be that person who's passionate and motivated and will do what it takes to get a slot legally.
Yeah, this opens up a whole new topic, doesn't it? Do you take a roll down slot? Are you a purist? Are you willing to buy your way in by, like you said, if you do three Ironmans a year for, you know, 4 years, you've earned an opportunity to be in the legacy, and they'll put you in when it's your time and you've got your spot. But there's also some other rules with that legacy, like you have to have signed up for an Ironman that year and you still got to pay for it. But, and this is something that happened to me a couple of years ago, and I thought about this on a long ride recently, that I'm glad I didn't, for fitness reasons, but also just for my own personal, my personal integrity, of I could have bought for a charity a Kona slot a few years ago. I think we probably talked about that. And I decided against it. It's like $5,000. If I would have donated $5,000 of my own money to this event or this organization, they would have gifted me a Kona slot. And I was so close to doing it. And I wanted to make sure there were some other factors that went into doing it. But my fitness wasn't there. And then I thought, well, I could still just do it for the experience, but I don't want to do it that way. Whereas other people, they don't mind. It's nothing wrong, nothing right. It's just your choice. For those like you who've done it, what, a dozen times or 19 times? I forget how many times you've done Kona.
I've done 20. I've done 10 or 11 in Kona, okay. But I've done 20 total.
Okay. So for those who have earned it and know what it takes, and then you're out there and you see that they're athletes, you go, I know that person earned it. I know that person probably didn't earn it, but, you know, technically, but they're all there. So I don't know. That's a whole other topic of, there's no real wrong answer. It's all personalized. I'm on a tangent here.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, going back to buying a charity slot, you know, Women for Tri is also an organization that has so many slots given to the organization that they give to people who have...
Or raffle off, auction off.
Yeah, a raffle or auction, or to women who have participated in all the Women for Tri stuff. I don't know what all that consists of, but I know an athlete who ended up getting a slot from the Women for Tri a few years ago, and I coached her. And, you know, she went to Kona. She finished in like 13, 14 hours, so it was really great. Mm-hmm. She deserved to be there, you know, because she did finish under the qualifying time, and it was a really good experience for her, and she enjoyed it. So, you know, you just gotta be open to, you know, having a strong why is going to motivate you, whatever direction you want to go, to achieve anything you want to achieve.
My philosophy, this is personal insight, is that I just want to outlast my age group. So I'm not going to get it in the next 5 years, but maybe I have an opportunity in my 55 to 59 age group era. If that doesn't work, I'm going to continue to outlast them and make it in 60. That doesn't work, then I'm never going to do it. I mean, you know, I'm just joking, but that's my personal idea, just because I'm a lifetime athlete who discovered triathlon 20 plus years ago, and I enjoy it, but I didn't have a background in anything specific. I didn't grow up swimming until I was at 24 or something. I biked a lot, but just recreational, and I ran just because it was part of soccer or part of football or something like that. And so for me, this has been, you know, a lifestyle, but I'm never going to be the elite. I'll be the top third, top 25% probably, just because of work and experience and just being fit. But that's my thought of, I'm just going to do my best and outlast.
I think that's great, because I've heard that before. I think that's a great way to have that mindset of, you're not going to like stop doing triathlon because you're in a very tough age group and your lifestyle is not indicative of you to be able to train and have what it takes to qualify right now, but it's not going to mean you're going to stop. You're going to keep going until you can.
And in a way, I feel like that still I can earn and feel like I earned the spot by having a lifestyle that is triathlon. So just because someone right now is a better athlete than me, but they stopped, And then 5 years from now, I earn my slot, and they've been a longtime Kona earner, whatever, or qualifier, earner. Doesn't mean that I'm a better athlete than them. I just kept going. And they their life cycle maybe ended. Like, they're done competing at an elite level in those tough age groups. If you're qualifying now between 35 and 50, you're awesome. You're a great athlete. You put the time in. You've got a talent. You've work ethic. You've earned it. I can't, because I don't have those talents or those natural abilities, but I will continue working, and I'm still going to, I feel like I'm going to earn it even at 56 years old or 61 years old. I'll still earn it because I didn't stop. Not that not stopping is not failure. It's just like, I'm still going. I'm okay with it. I still earned it. And if you don't want to do it anymore, great. More opportunity for me to earn that slot.
Yeah. And you know, again, it depends who shows up. If you do a qualifying race, who shows up? I'm not an athlete who ever looks at my competitors, because that's not going to change how fit I am. And that's not going to change how I prepare to race at all. It's not going to change my mindset either, because, you know, I coach athletes who always look at their competitors, and I'm like, what's the point? Like, well, how is that going to change how you race? We have an execution plan for you. Follow your execution plan and you'll be successful. Because if you get carried up on what someone else is doing or someone that's going to be there, that's going to throw off your mental game. And that could actually lead to negative self-talk. Like, oh, so-and-so is going to be there. I know her results. I can't beat her. So you start saying words like it's impossible or words like I can't. When that just did, you know, that's just negative, and you should never even say those things in the first place. So, you can go into a race with really tough competition, but anything is possible. They could have their struggles. They could drop out. You just always have to stay focused on yourself and what you're doing, and train, prepare, and execute, and see what happens.
You think this only really applies to the top 1%ers or less? About racing the race against your competitors, because they're all so close in skill level. Like, they're to, you know, they're all going to be a couple seconds off on their average run pace or their whatever their strengths are. It's really when someone says, oh, so and so is here, it's going to be a tough race, or I got to beat them to win, then you're only talking about the top so many percent. Everyone else is just what your fitness level is what you can do on the day.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, yeah. That's true.
Because the pros, I mean, they go, okay, I know this guy or gal, whatever, I'll say guys. This guy is strong on the bike, so I got to be a little faster on the bike, or I got to save my legs because I know I'm a faster runner than this guy. So if I can just stay close to him, so he's just playing strategy. So strategy comes into play. I think the top 1%ers, the pros, the very, very elite.
The pros, I think definitely strategy comes into play for the pros.
Yeah. And then it works that way too. Stay in this one this one pack, or I need to be in the lead pack off the bike here, or I need to be in the front swim group, or whatever it is. It's like, and then you're playing mental games. Then it's all about 10 guys can win the race. You know, that's that kind of thing.
Right. So there's a difference between training to compete and training to finish. That's a whole new topic that we don't need to go into, but I just wanted to throw that out there. You know, are you training to compete and be in the top percentage of your age group, or are you just training to finish? That really is going to change your mental strategy as well as race strategy. Someone like me, I got the swim, not worried about it. My competition kicks my butt on the bike. And so if I want to compete with them, I really have to up my game on my bike because I know in the past I've had good runs, where right now I want to compete in my race in October. So I'm really focused on that bike, trying to limit the amount of time my competitors are going to get me from my bike split because I know I have the run and the swim.
That's cool.
Because I have the experience, you know, again, it goes back to experience and taking all my, you know, 20 Ironman experiences into my last race in Kona. It's going to be awesome.
Fine tuning. Fine tuning.
Yeah.
Yeah. These little areas. I do the same thing when it comes to my dart game. There's little areas where I know I'm always good at this part of it, but this is the area I need to work on because I know my competitor is probably better at this, and I need that little window, that little buffer so I can win.
And I think that's the fun part about training is I've been doing this for 30 years, but there's still things that I do different from year to year, and I'm still tweaking things here, tweaking things there, which is really fun for me. Again, I enjoy the process. That's why I'm still doing it. Yeah. So having that process-oriented mindset versus dreading the outcome. You know, it makes a big difference on longevity in the sport, and being there when you're 70, being the only one in your age group, so you get a slot.
That's kind of weird, right? It's like, I showed up, I'm still fit, you know, I'm still working out, I didn't stop. Yeah,
and that's not a bad thing to happen when you're chasing the Ironman Kona dream, if you enjoy the process, if you enjoy what it takes to, you know, physically prepare your body and mind to try to compete for a Kona slot. If you don't get it, you just change something, you keep going, and you keep up this lifestyle. It's not a bad thing.
Here's another just similar, here's just a tangent here. If you went to school with certain people, you went to school, whether it's high school, college, and they look at you now and they let themselves go and they look at you and they're like jealous. Well, they had short-term goals. You've had a long-term life goal, and they go, oh, she's always fit. Yeah, because I didn't stop working out. I didn't stop and sit on the couch and watch movies for the last 4 years. I'm still working. I earned where I am now. So you can't be jealous. You just stopped working out. So right. I have friends, a lot of my friends right now are turning 50 because that's my age group. Uh-huh. And I don't know any of them that are, and this is just this facts, I don't know any of them that are as fit as I am, because I don't know anyone who did triathlon or started triathlon or has been doing it for 20 years.
Right.
And so I had that advantage just because they don't do that. I mean, it's a very specific lifestyle. And I didn't grow up doing triathlon until I was in my 20s. So when if they were to see me or if I anything... It's like, Dave's always fit. Well, you are always fit. That's why you're overweight, or that's why you look older than 50, or that's why I don't look 50 per se, because I didn't stop. And I also had to sacrifice to get this. It's not like I just woke up and, oh, he's got good genetics or whatever. No, I didn't stop. You know, I had to pay my dues, and you didn't. You know, you had that extra candy bar. I ate candy bars. But you know what I'm saying?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. You know, you prioritized your health and fitness. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to, and you enjoy the lifestyle, you know.
It's the path I chose, and they chose a different path. Yeah. And now they are living with the choices they made. And I am living with the choices I made. And I'm going to live longer, unfortunately, than some of my friends. And this is all only because I'm, you know, a lot of them turning 50. I'm going to live longer because most likely I've got the foundation to live longer because I took care of myself. And unfortunately, my friends did not. Mm-hmm. And I'm sad to think that, things are failing and I haven't fallen off the cliff yet. And I thought about that because I'm 50. I haven't fallen. What's going to fall off first? You know, what's going to happen? Where am I going to have my issues where my friends are having issues or having, diabetes or they're, you know, just super overweight, or well, you shouldn't have been smoking for so many years, or you should have, made better choices. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think triathlon or anyone's sport that they do for longevity is self care, and it's self care for mental and physical well being. You don't have to compete and be at a podium to enjoy the sport. You just have to, you know, make it a game and have it be your enjoyment time, your fun time, your stress relief time, your challenge time. I mean, there's a lot that goes into a sport than just the competition part of it. Mm-hmm. And the competition can be great self-care as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So many positive outcomes to a multi-sport lifestyle. It doesn't have to be winning. Finishing is just do that. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just, again, I'm sorry. I'm reflecting on this birthday, a lot of birthdays coming up for my friend group, and I think about what they look like or who they are and going, you've got issues, here, there, and there, and I don't have those issues yet, but hopefully this is that phrase. Life is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You got to, sure, if you want to live fast and die young with a good-looking corpse, fine, go ahead and do that. I want to live a little bit longer, and I'm going to have more years, and being a parent, a new parent, I want to have as many years as possible. And that's one of those strong whys of it'd be so cool. It's hard to think that I got to wait so many more years to have my kids appreciate or see me do something in Kona. If they understand what that means, they know, dad's exercising or dad's on the bike. This is so funny. 2 days ago, Finn comes in, my boy Finn, he's four. and a half. I think 4 and a half. Yeah. He says, how come you're wearing your bike costume? And I was getting ready to go out and do a bike ride. And I laughed, literally laughed out loud, my bike costume, because they have dress up costumes. They'll be astronauts, doctors.
I love it. Yeah.
My bike costume. So I'm going out for a bike ride. Oh, okay. So cute.
That is so fun.
Oh. All right, there's a long
tangent. And again, just one little thing about longevity, you know, I'm turning 50 next year. I've been doing this for 30 years. My body has 30 years of triathlon wear and tear, as well as I'm a master's athlete. So I'm starting to do the self-care, like massage and chiropractic, and I don't skip my strength training and mobility because I want to still do this for another 30 years. And so there's a lot of, you know, issues we master's athletes can experience because we are getting older and we are still trying to put in a certain volume and certain intensity, that we could also get injured and be out of the sport. And so there's just a lot that you want to look into that has more to do with the non-training activities that you're doing to keep longevity in the sport.
30 more years, Wendy?
Yeah, I'll be 80.
No, but you want to be doing this in 30 years? Or what do you, where do you want to?
I want to be still active. I won't be doing triathlon I'm on a 30-year streak. So, yeah. I mean, to maintain my streak, I just need to do one triathlon a year.
Okay.
But I just want to be active and healthy. That's what I mean by doing this, meaning leading an active lifestyle. That could turn into, you know, hiking the Appalachian Trail maybe when I'm 60, hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, you know, hiking the Colorado Trail. So just doing other endurance related activities that aren't triathlon.
Okay, this is 85 years. I just saw this somewhere in social. The world's oldest 70.3 finisher, or was it the full? It must have been 70.3.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to find the number here of how old that person was to finish a 70.3.
Because it just happened.
87, maybe. Was that right? That's world's oldest Ironman a couple years ago, 87.
Well, Sister Madonna, I think, is 89.
Yeah, but she's not going to be able to finish any more Ironmans. She can be, yeah. She tried a few years ago to get in the line, but she didn't make the cutoff.
Uh-huh.
Gosh, I think it was 84, 85. I'm trying to find the most recent article, and I just saw this recently, so maybe the past week.
Sister Madonna is 91 years old.
Wow.
And she started when she was 52, I believe. She started running at age 52.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There was someone who just finished a race, and there was a picture. I think it was I don't remember. Anyhow, I'll move on. Well, all this happened from one question.
Thank you, Katie, for
Thank
asking
you, Katie.
The question.
Thanks for the podcast topic. We can do one more, I guess, or let's see. Do you have a preference on the question? Joe, Lisa, Kathy, Tom, Andreas? Which one do you want to answer?
From Joe, how many weeks would you wait between finishing a 70.3 and starting a training plan for 140.6?
Great question, Joe, because that's what Dave's going to be doing here in a couple of weeks. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, again, it always depends on the athlete and why they're asking and what their previous experience is and what their current training plan is like. As a coach and as an athlete, I say if you're training for a 140.6, you follow a training plan for that 140.6 and include a 70.3 as preparation for your 140.6 training plan. So I don't really recommend you just say, okay, here's a 16-week 70.3 plan. Bam, I did the race. And now I'm going to completely start a new plan for the 140.6.
Yep.
That's going to happen in another 16 weeks. I would just follow, if you have 32 weeks, I would just follow a 32-week plan for the 140.6 and include a 70.3. Most plans, at least ours do, we include races within the plan, and athletes will adjust. You know, let's say the race was supposed to be scheduled for June 5th. but there was no race, but there was a race on June 12th, we'll just kind of flip-flop weeks and do the scheduled race on June 12th rather than June 5th. And so that's really the answer to that question.
This also depends on how many weeks or months between the races they are, because mine is 2.5 weeks for my 70.3, and after that it's 5 months, I think, for my full.
Good point. So yeah, a lot of back details we would need to fully answer this question.
Yeah,
but go on.
Yeah, you're right, because I mean, I'm going to take a 4 or 5 days to kind of slowly recover. I'd probably get in the pool after this race is over. Actually, I do have a sprint in 2 weeks after that. But your point was that the fitness that you've gained at that 70.3 should continue to roll over into the training for that full distance. So you don't want to take time off and like restart. That would be starting from scratch. No, you have a higher fitness level, so it has to be within, I would think, your 140.6 training plan is where you incorporate that half.
Yeah, and when I read this question, I think I was just making an assumption that he was going to do a 70.3 and then maybe have an Ironman, 8 to 12 weeks later. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about you. So you're doing a 70.3, and then you're going to have 5 months until you're 140.6. Mm-hmm. So like you already said, you're going to take some downtime, transitional time, just to, I'd say, take a month to just be active and kind of almost like a little mini transition, little mini postseason, and then start to focus mentally on the 140.6 after about a month of kind of free training where you're not really following any specific intensity or specific distance. You're just kind of maintaining some fun stuff, and then say, okay, now I'm 16 weeks out instead of 20. Let's go back to some heavier base training, volume training at a new fitness level, and maybe do another race, maybe do a sprint or an Olympic in that final 16-week prep before the 70.3.
Yeah,
or so before the 140.6.
I have a sprint, and I really shouldn't have done this. I didn't realize what I was doing. 2 weeks after the half Ironman. It's a sprint, so it's going to...
I think that's great. I think that's perfect.
I've done it before. I want to do it again. It's a very simple, very easy, very flat sprint. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be in an hour race. 2 weeks after. And then I've got a 4 or 5 weeks after for an Olympic. So that's how I've got that stacked.
Work on your speed. Maybe you spent those 6 weeks after your take some time to recover and then just focus on short intensity mm-hmm. for 6 weeks and do that sprint, do that Olympic.
Yeah.
Before you get into volume again.
And then I've got a solid 2.5 months before the full. So there should be, for me personally, there should be some plenty of fitness there from the half, which will, I don't know if it'll translate into the sprint, but it's a sprint, so I can just go hard for an hour.
Oh,
and then
yeah,
I got,
you have, yeah, you should be really good in the sprint.
I would hope so. It's so short. And then a month later, I got an Olympic, which there's no recovery after the sprint a day. Mm-hmm. Then work on some speed for that one, some hills, and just have fun with that one. And then take a few days, 3, 4, 5 days off, and then back time the Ironman Arizona race, wherever it should be with one of our intermediate Ironman plans. Yeah, we call advanced Ironman plans.
Yeah. When we're talking training programs, I'm just thinking, there's just a balance, as a coach athlete, you're balancing frequency, intensity, and duration. And so it's just a matter of setting the race dates and knowing how much time you have between the 70.3 and 140.6. And if you are going to do, like you're going to do, Dave, some sprints and Olympics, mm-hmm. that's going to change the intensity and the volume of your training for a period of time. And then, you add more volume as you get closer to the Ironman when you're 8 to 12 weeks out. So
yeah.
Again, lots of variables involved. And going back to what I originally said, the 70.3 should be part of a 140.6 plan.
Yeah. And I would say also anyone who has, maybe a couple of 70.3s back to back, is that you would just train through those sprint or Olympic races and not let it affect the big picture. It shouldn't really matter too much, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, I would call those C races, A, B, and C. C mm-hmm. as in less priority races, where if you had, let's say a 2 or 3 hour ride plan that weekend and a 1 to 2 hour run plan that weekend, you substitute that training for a sprint or an Olympic distance.
Yeah.
But you don't really have to train or change much before that. You just keep with your training plan, and instead of doing those longer workouts, you just do the race. Maybe take a day off.
Yep.
And do the race.
Yeah.
It's a good brick workout, good transition workout. Even if you go into a fatigue, you can still do really well in fatigued legs. You can still do really well in a sprint after 70.3 training. You could PR.
Well, yeah, I'll let you know. I'll let everybody know. Yeah. Gosh, that takes up our time for today. I know it's, you know, a little over a half hour or so, but we wanted to get a couple questions in and then whatever else happens. So thanks that we can be helpful for you. Was it Katie who, no, someone else sent us a big thank you. Remember that message you sent me about the previous podcast?
Yeah.
Was that through Facebook or I don't know if I should read it?
I think it was through email, but I don't remember exactly what it said. But we've been getting a lot of good comments. You know, we get more people joining our T2 Endurance Facebook group. We have more people involved because they're purchasing our training plans on Training Peaks, and that's how they're hearing about our Facebook group, as well as just friends are recommending them join. You know, I try to post questions and answer other people's questions that they post in the group to try to get, you know, the community involvement and get people a little bit more active. You know, but there's so many podcasts to choose from. There's so many groups to choose from. Sometimes it's just hard to keep up with everything.
Well, I'll read it. I found it here. This is from Sean. Quote, "I owe a lot to you and Dave, Wendy. Sure, I did the work required in each workout, but your training plans, podcasts, Training Peaks comments, guidance, swim analysis, YouTube videos, and the swim lesson in Woodstock were all collectively the lighthouse of direction, motivation, and confidence I needed to get to this point. And I'm not just talking physically. I grew mentally and emotionally as an athlete a lot more than I anticipated as well. I owe you and Dave a huge thank you. I appreciate you." If that's all it takes, Sean, you're very welcome. Thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
So we helped Sean, and I'm sure we're helping you. If you take time to leave us a comment or even go on iTunes and leave a comment, that's great. Either way, we're going to keep on doing this. So thank you for listening. Thanks for supporting us. For Coach Wendy Mader, who's going to Kona again this year, I'm Dave Erickson. Have a great week of training, racing, and recovery. See you next time. Adios.
Adios.